Okie dokie out there. What is going on, my people, peoples, peoples, peoples out there? We are live right now. Stephen Ignoramus in the house, and we got a nice little discussion planned for the night. We have two guests on this evening. One of them is Carl Emmerich, and the other is Anna Woltus. Both were on the show within the last couple weeks to talk politics and things like that. I'm really excited for our discussion tonight. Thanks for coming on, gentlemen.
Yeah, thanks for having me back, Stephen.
You guys doing good? You guys hear everything okay? And
yes,
sweet, awesome, guys. So let's basically what we're gonna do tonight. I wanted to I was talking to Anna Woltus about this off air, but basically I had three or four questions that I had prepared for you guys in our individual interviews that I didn't ask you guys. We didn't have time for it, and I they almost were around the same subjects, like healthcare and how to take care of people that can't take care of themselves and how to direct funds and things like that. So we're just gonna have a good discussion tonight, and this will be uploaded as a podcast later. So let's just go to Anna Woltus first, and why don't you just tell us, you know, you basically invented a system of government, and we talked about it on the show, but why don't you just give you people the rundown of how you see politics, and also talk about what you do on your channel.
Yes, I'm Anna Woltus. I run a YouTube channel, but I've also got my own website, coinanism.com. I developed an entirely new political ideology called coinanism. I also, as a philosopher, made some developments in the epistemology of justice, as well as in general theories of ethics. And I published a book called Actionable Justice that is available on Amazon Kindle. Now, I'd like to say that in regards to my general political viewpoint, I would say that I am a philosophical realist, and that in regards to how I treat government, I'm very process-oriented, where I think that having a good and well-structured government provides a system wherein the people can provide for their needs, and also wherein the government can provide for its needs, such as its continued preservation in order to continue to establish justice in the society.
Okay. And so what kind of stuff have you done on your channel as far as talking about this stuff, other than other than just coinanism?
Well, I have talked about varying ideas of ethics. I've done some political commentating, but I primarily focus on the sort of back end philosophical type dilemmas and such things.
Cool. All right. Nice. So, yeah. So let's go over to Carl now and just tell us the kind of same thing. What about your channel, and how do you kind of view politics, and, you know, maybe what the present situation is?
Yeah, no, definitely. So I definitely think that I'm a lot less sophisticated maybe than Anna Woltus is. Cool. I think I focus more on what I consider to be pretty practical things. I like to think of, like, have some pretty specific policy goals. You know, for those of you who don't know, I'm a progressive, so I believe in, like, social democracy. And so what that means is, like, certain sectors being socialized, such as healthcare, education, prisons. And then I also believe in well-regulated markets. I do think that markets have a place. I'm not, like, a full-on socialist, where I don't think that there's any place for private property, not at all. On my channel, I talk about different news events, just talking about different political figures. And I basically just have certain goals that I would like to see implemented. And that's kind of the nature of my channel.
Great. Yeah, cool. So let's just start right there then. Because, I mean, to me, you know, when someone's someone says they're a progressive or any kind of accepted ideology in the mainstream, it's like you're saying you kind of, like, you listed a couple things that you view as like the right path forward. So maybe can you, I don't know if I'm remembering it from what you just said or from our interview, but I know you like universal college, like healthcare. Can you just list what government programs you want to see implemented one more time by the federal government?
No, definitely. And then also, just before I touch on that, I will say that I believe that the most important issue, though, that we need to change is we need to get money out of politics. I think that we need campaign finance reform. Cool. Where politicians are essentially being bribed by big money interest corporations. And so I think that's the most important thing. But as far as what government programs I'd like to see, Medicare for all, free college, I think that we need more public works programs, more public housing. I think that we should be investing more in a variety of different things, different jobs programs. I think that there's no reason why the unemployment rate should be as high as it is.
cool. I mean, all right. So why don't Anavaltus then just take one of those, like it's like healthcare or especially I saw you kind of shake like nodding your head when you was talking about campaign finance. Are you in favor of money, so-called money in politics, or no?
Well, I'm in favor of structuring the government in a way that it produces a system where it becomes unnecessary to run large and expensive campaigns.
Okay, in what
And
way?
the way I would do that is by implementing a type of cellular democracy where the levels of government are flexible and there are multiple levels of government so that, in essence, in order to get elected to the next higher level, you have to be elected by the level immediately below that in order to produce a system where, instead of politics being based on large publicity, it is instead based on actually establishing relations of trust.
So like more localization, but what about in like the present government? Like, would you do you think that even taking money out of politics would help, or what would you say about that?
Well, in order to win large elections that are more centralized in the way that they are in this country, what you essentially have to do is you need a large amount of publicity. Now, there's two ways to do that. One way is through a large amount of money from big donors. The other one is through grassroots activism. But I personally am not a populist, so I don't think that having sort of that degree of separation between the people and the government actually produces a consistent quality in voting. I think that the smaller the field of the electorate, the actually more productive debates can be had,
Yeah, I see.
and also the greater the quality of the resulting elected politicians are.
Okay, so Carlin, why don't you just describe what do you think would be achieved if you got? Can you give me like a definition of? I have a follow-up question too, but like money out of politics. Do you mean like because what is it? Citizens United, where it's like it removes the cap on, is it's the cap on individual or corporate donations?
Sort of corporate donations. The biggest kind of takeaway from Citizens United is it made it where corporations are recognized as people when it comes to donating to campaigns, and that they
Okay.
have all the same like freedom of speech rights as just regular people do. And so what that's allowed is, and also it opened the door for super PACs and a variety of other different things. A lot of things kind of were taken away from Citizens United, but that was like kind of the main thing.
Okay, gotcha. And so do you think that, do you think like blanketly that speech it money is not speech? Do you agree with that statement?
I think that's, yeah, I would agree with that
Okay.
statement.
So, but what if the, like, but do you think that a poor person's money is speech, or like what if that's the only way that they can be heard? Do you like so you think literally speech is speech?
I think that when we're talking about freedom of speech, I think that that should definitely go towards speech. And now I think that we can have a different set of rules for when how we want to regulate, donating to campaigns and
Oh, you're
everything.
just
But I
talking about
don't
there's
think.
this thing called the election, and that should be kind of not money in elections should not be considered speech, period.
Exactly. Yeah,
Okay.
and within an election context, yeah.
So it's not that it's all money across all, not just big money. It's just no money in
Yeah.
politics. Or excuse
Essentially,
me,
yeah.
money in elections, 'cause money has to be in politics 'cause of taxes,
Yeah,
but
yeah.
like money in elections. Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. I mean, I one thing that makes me think about for you and Voltis is like your system of government was really is really anti-corruption, right?
I'd like to say that.
Do you think that's
Oh.
corrupt? Yeah, Carl, that's what I ask you. Do you think that's corruption?
Do I think that?
Like
Oh, yeah.
money.
I would say that that's a form of corruption because what you see is you see corporations, they donate to the politicians, and then the politicians do what they say. You know what I mean? I mean, you can look at like what how like the top 1% of people, how they vote. Like if we're talking top 1% in terms of wealth, that's like basically what happens in terms of government. Like how rich people vote, that's what we see happen.
Yeah, okay. Interesting. Do you agree with what he's saying, Anavaltis?
Yes, I do agree that the large amount of influence that a lot of wealthy individuals and also corporations have in the government through their large donations and lobbying is actually, in essence, throwing us off track from effective policies, and many times into sort of either policies that end up favoring only a specific group of people to the disfavor of other groups, or policies that end up actually being big mistakes and dead ending into a crisis or a disaster. So I do have to agree that with that idea.
Well, let's hold on to that moment, fellas, because we all three of us agree on something. That is amazing. Because it's self-evident. I mean, I don't know about like the solution. I mean, I would like to see, you know, I don't know. Like, I would like to see small, like the poor, like the poor masses have at least more of a say compared to like Jeff Bezos types. Like, that would be nice. I don't know the text of Citizens United, so I don't know. I mean, if you're calling an individual and a corporation the same, I think that's bullshit. You know, so I just got to read it or whatever. But I mean, Carl, do you, in the Constitution, it says that, you know, we have rights imbued by the Creator or whatever, by God. Do you believe in God given rights or government granted rights?
So I am a Christian, but I don't think that is an effective way at talking about politics, because not everybody's a Christian, not everybody believes in God. You know, if I'm talking to an atheist and I say, oh, rights are given by the Creator, they're gonna say, okay, I don't believe in the Creator, so what does that have to do with me? So I just don't think that when we're talking about politics, it's super effective. So I try to keep like my personal religious beliefs kind of out of it, just because I don't think, because I want people to kind of agree with what I'm saying. And so making appeals to religion, I don't think is the most effective way to do that.
Do you think that's an appeal to a religion,
to say that
we're imbued with rights by the Creator, or however you want to phrase it, but just like saying that we have God-given rights is an appeal to religion?
It is, but I would argue that in the way that the founders framed the process of that, I would say, and I've put a criticism of this, that it is actually inconsistent with the theology, at least as I understand it.
In what way?
Well, They framed it in a sort of Thomistic way, in following the vein of Thomas Aquinas and John Locke, in using nature as a medium for these rights as being represented in nature.
Yeah,
and
you mentioned
I disagree with that fundamentally.
Okay. Wow, interesting. And so, like, that's interesting that, Carl, you say appeal to religion. I guess it is, yeah. I don't know how to square it, because, like, the founders did do that. So would you change that part of the Constitution, Carl?
I don't think – I mean, when we're talking about changes that we need to push for, I don't think –
you like to stay, like, super, practical and, like
– super. I don't think that that's a super relevant change, to be honest.
Really? Well, I mean, I would say – I mean, people debate, you know, explicit separation of church and state is not in the Constitution. People debate that all the time. I think it's definitely relevant. it's a good point. I mean, do you think there's a system of government that can work for everybody, Carl?
I like to think that we can make a system of government that can work more equally for more people. It's never going to be perfect. I don't think that any system is ever going to be entirely perfect. I think that anyone who tells you that their system is going to be perfect, I think they're lying to you, or they're just delusional. But I do think that we can work towards a more equal system.
More equal. That it's just, how do you measure that?
I like to measure it in terms of equal opportunity. I want everyone to have an equal opportunity at success, not equal outcomes, equal opportunity.
Okay. In what way though? Like how do you measure that?
Well, I think that you can measure that whether or not people have access to bare necessities. You know, if someone has, if they can't go to college, if they get cancer, for example, and then like, or say, you know, you're a kid, you're growing up, your mom gets cancer, and then you're going to be strapped with medical bills. And I don't think that those people have the same opportunity. So if we have something like Medicare for All, we can take that kind of out of the thing.
Yeah.
When we're talking about like public education, the way that they're funded currently, where public schools are funded by property taxes. So when you have people that grow up in very rich areas, they get to go to nicer schools. And when you have people growing up in poor areas, they get to go to worse schools.
But how do you do that without like shipping people in trains everywhere and shit? Like it's like there's not equal places and stuff, you know? Like, so like if you provide public education, like say to everybody in the country, and you would like have to force them to move to equal places, like equal quality places in order to like in order to achieve that. That's what, like, you know, to what ends are you willing to go to try to achieve that?
I'm kind of missing your point on how we would need to like shift people around.
Oh, because if you divert the same amount of funds to like an inner city somewhere, to a different public school system, and they get like the same amount of funds, I'm just saying, if you make everything equal, everything sucks in a weird way. And
how so?
That's the only way to achieve it. I mean,
for everything to suck.
Yeah, that's the true equality. It means you have to bring kind of everyone down a peg rather than than pushing everyone up. That's just my opinion. But
how could it not also just be, I mean, couldn't I just on the flip side say it's pushing everyone up a peg?
Let me ask Anna Voltus about that. Do you agree with that statement? Like, that's a common like liberty guy statement. I'll own it, that like in order to achieve equality you have to like basically mow the grass.
Well, it really depends on the situation, I would say, because there's a lot of different arguments as to which formulations produce the most amount of prosperity, and whether actually having a more diverse society in terms of income produces more or less prosperity. But in my system, I decide to actually leave it up to the communities to decide which path they want to pursue and whether they want to cooperate on pursuing that path. So some communities might be in favor of this, some communities might be against it, and they'll be able to team up with like-minded communities voluntarily. And ultimately, what we'll see is a sort of a macro level competition, and we'll see which systems are more effective.
Can I ask you something about that, Anna Voltus?
Yes.
So I feel like because I noticed that kind of honestly, just I know you're not a libertarian, but with like libertarian thinking also, it's like, well, we'll leave it to like to communities to decide. And it's like, I mean, are we not like the community right now discussing what we should do? Like, it's just, I feel like it's almost just kind of pushing the problem to the side to say like, well, I think communities will decide it. And so it's like, at what point do you say, all right, now we're a community, let's decide it, you know?
Well, I consider community as something that is based on a lot of personal relationships. So when you blow that up to a larger level, it eventually sort of loses, the voice gets lost among the many. But I think one of the reasons why I'm in favor of that type of sort of localist decentralization is, and again, this is not a sort of full individualist decentralization, where I'm not saying that each individual gets to choose. I'm saying that they elect a local government that then regulates all this. And if they want to go full, almost totalitarian on the issues, they can. But it'll be up to the people living in it to vote for it. But when it concerns the question that you asked, that I think one of the reasons why I'm in favor of this type of decentralization is because, in my view, having a sort of one-size-fits-all system or sort of highly centralized system leads to desires of rebellion and secessionism, which from a realistic standpoint of policy is something that should be avoided.
Hmm. So if it didn't do that, Anavaltis, would you be in favor of centralization? If you'd had moral homogeneity or whatever.
Well, so if everybody, if nobody was upset by it, and yeah, we know that there are people that are upset by it, but hypothetically, if nobody is upset by it, then I would still say that, of course, it would be a form of social experimentation, and I don't want to put all my eggs in one basket.
Okay. And so Carl, do you see the grassroots, like, okay, so actually before I even ask that, you ask a good question, because you're talking about what the size of community is, you know, like, it's like, at what point do we become a community? I don't know. It's hard to tell, but I think that Anna Volta's answer with like it being based on personal relationships is key. And I don't know, there's a range to how many personal relationships one can have, but there is like a maximum, and it's not like a million, you know, it's not a million. It might be 100,000, you know, but it's not 330 million. Would you agree that a million is not a community? Would you agree with that?
I think it depends on how you define community. I think that
personal relationships.
Personal relationships. Yeah. It'd be impossible to have a personal relationship with over a million people. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. Okay. Cool. I mean, so that's a very interesting question, though. I mean, I just don't. So, do you think that what do you think about like localization of everything rather than like, you know, taking the money of everybody to enact programs on everybody?
I feel like you asked two questions there. So localization versus taking the money of, or
what? Well, I mean, okay. Yeah. So I guess my question is about the one size fits all approach, you know, to have these big federal government programs, you need everybody to comply. You know, that's what a national law is. So if you do a thing where you're going to, you know, you're going to provide taxpayer funded things like healthcare, universities, things like that, you know, that takes extra money from everybody. Basically, that means taxes are going to go up from basically everybody, you know, like, what about localizing and letting people like move and decide what they want to do rather than that plan?
Well, so I guess my response to that is I think that it started localized. Everything throughout history, it started as localized, and then when people grow and they form larger communities and they form larger communities. Like, I think what would happen is if we started with what kind of Anna Voltis is describing, I think you'd have communities kind of join together because it's more efficient, and then more communities would join together. Cool. And I think we'd get to where we are today.
And I'm not against that. I'm just saying that once we get multiple communities, I want it to be more voluntary so that other communities that disagree don't feel like they're being oppressed.
Yeah. But wouldn't that, I mean, that is what happened though, is these communities came together voluntary. And I know that Stephen, you have a disagreement with me on this, whether or not you've consented to be living here and consented to being taxed. But I think that, I don't see how that's really fair to say that you haven't like consented.
Oh, it's fine. Just finish your point. We don't have to debate that. Just finish your point. Like, but I mean, you're saying that we have bought into the system just finish your point rather than talking about mine. Cause we can talk about that later.
Yeah. So I think localization, I think it's going to end up with more centralization. I think that that's kind of the inevitability of it. I think that the communities grow larger and larger.
Ah, okay. Would you agree with that, Anna Voltis?
Well, I think that what we would see is essentially multi-party parliamentary system, but represented on a local level, where you have a few major theories of economic and social models that become represented, and that might be in competition economically against each other. But I don't think that we could necessarily have everybody agree on the same system. I think that's highly unlikely. I'm not saying that it's impossible. And if it were to happen, I wouldn't object to it, because then if that did happen, then there wouldn't be enough people that are objecting to actually form their own little community. So that essentially means that everybody agrees. So I'm not saying that that's something that I would object to.
Interesting. Okay. Got it. I mean, so what about the marketplace though? Like, okay, so you're not a socialist, you're a democratic socialist, but there can be full on socialism through democratic means. So like, at what level are you not a socialist?
Oh, I would say I wouldn't even use the term democratic socialist. Oh. I would say social democrat.
Social democrat.
In the U.S., I think the term democratic socialist has kind of strayed away from what the actual definition is.
Yeah, it's gone downhill fast.
It's not what I think democratic socialism. I think the actual definition is basically what you just described, not state socialism, but like democratically elected socialism. I don't consider myself a socialist. I consider myself a social democrat. So I do believe in like socialization, but I don't think that is quite the same. But I do think that there is a place for markets, but I don't think that you can just let them run rampant, because I think that you have a lot of negative outcomes when you do that.
So you mean like price controls, like minimum wage, like what, describe what, well, kind of,
yeah,
yeah.
I'm a fan of the minimum wage. I think that I know that people will say like in, you know, different places in Europe, like in Norway and Denmark, that they don't have like a legal, like a federal minimum wage, but mm-hmm. they have such high levels of unionization that they already effectively have a minimum wage. And so like, if we had the levels of unionization that we would have in like Scandinavia, then I don't think a minimum wage is necessary.
Okay. And so, and Voltas, are you like, you're just free market in your system, right?
Well,
you let them decide.
It's
like
not
everything
exactly
else.
A free market.
Yeah.
It can be a free market, but it depends on the community, because the communities have full social and economic control of their policies. So you can have large coalitions of communities that agree to a certain set of free market ideals. You could also have some that are very collectivized and communistic. You could also have some that have a lot of unions and are therefore fascistic.
Okay. All right. So, and so I got a question from the chat right here. So it says, what is Carl's opinion about citizens opting out of these government programs?
Opting out of government programs?
Opting out.
I guess it would depend on like the government program. I think that like things like Medicare for All, I think that because everybody needs healthcare. And I think that if you say that you don't need healthcare, that's kind of wishful thinking. Like most people have a very large medical expense at some point in their life. And I think that it's important that everybody has access to that. And I think that the best way to do that.
What if they still say no?
What do you mean?
Like it's like you're literally saying this is good for you. You have to take it. What if they're just like, no?
They don't have to go to the hospital if they don't want to.
Right. But they want to opt out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if they want to opt out, I mean, they don't have to live within the United States, but if they were going to work in the United States, they're going to use U.S. currency. They're going to live off of the infrastructure that has been built by the United States. Then I think that it's fair if they're subject to the rules of the United States.
Wow. Okay. So you think that people like, I don't know how to square the, what you just said with, like that you've bought into it. You know what I mean? It doesn't make sense to me. You know what I mean?
Well, have you not, I mean, from the day that you're born, are you not a beneficiary of the U.S. government?
Yeah, but benefiting from something is not consenting. It's not the same thing. It's why we have different words.
No, yeah, no, I'm not saying that you, this is, I think that you've implicitly consented to it.
Do you believe that? Anavoltis, I want to be schooled on this from a philosophical standpoint, because that's where I'm looking at it from. Am I wrong about that, Anavoltis? From like a first principle standpoint? Like, have I consented to life by being born?
No.
Okay. Have I consented to being like under government rule by living in the society?
Well, I think by being born in the society, there's a sort of native imperialism where you are conquered by being born in the society.
You're being conquered. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So like, how can you explain why that, like, okay, so what do you think about that, Carl, that philosophical point, like that, because that's what I believe.
I mean, I guess I wouldn't necessarily disagree with that description of it. I mean, by like technical terms, but I don't think that there's any way around that. I don't think that we've ever seen any system that has existed in the way that you're referring to.
Yeah, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I think that's a good thing, in fact, but a sort of imperialism in that sense, because it is by that that we hold people accountable for their crimes. So in other words, you can't really have a justice system without having imperatives placed upon people, because if people just commit crimes and you don't place an imperative upon them, then those people can simply choose not to volunteer to be punished. And that would be a big problem in terms of justice anyway.
Interesting. Okay. So, I mean, like, so, you, like, I don't know. It's just, I don't know if, like, to me, it's like, if you haven't signed on something, if you haven't given your word, you haven't consented. It's like, there's no such thing as implicit consent.
In terms of your question as to whether or not living in a society after, let's say, you're fully grown and have reached, let's say, an age of accountability, etc., I think that it's a sort of a more vague idea, because I think government is obeyed through three different attitudes. And one is an attitude of love, which is a sort of positive idea towards the government. You could say patriotism would be an example of that. Another one is the idea of fear, which Machiavelli likes to prefer over the idea of love in that sense, where it, you might have a fear of a punishment for when you commit a crime. And the third one, I would say, is an attitude of, and this one, I've had a difficulty getting a term for this, because acceptance sounds a bit too positive for it, but essentially I'm trying to describe the idea of governmentality.
Subjugation?
Well, I think normativity might be another way to describe it.
Okay.
In the sense that people behave in a certain way as a habit rather than as a sort of a positive or negative response.
Momentum based, or
and the opposite of that would be, of course, opposite to love you have hate, opposite to fear you would have foolhardiness, and opposite to this normativity you would have deviancy, which is people that simply reject authority for no particular reason.
Hmm. Wow, that's pretty deep shit. So fear, love, and like normativity, huh? Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I mean, it makes sense. Yeah, that's like, so Carl, do you think government's good? You think government?
Yes.
You think government's good? Anavoltis, you do as well,
and
right?
I actually,
it's okay. I'll get back to you in 1 second, but Anavoltis, you do as well, right? You feel government
yes,
is good.
And not just in a pragmatic sense, because from a pragmatic and realistic sense, I do. But also from a religious sense, I think it's clearly, and we're all Christians here, so I don't see a problem in saying this. It's clearly written that God has established the rulers of this world.
Wow. Cool. That's interesting. So yeah, so I just wanted to get like a yes or no for me. So keep going, Carl. Yeah, so you think government's good. Keep going.
Oh, well, I kind of wanted to maybe try and persuade you a little bit, Stephen, because I think that a big reason why you kind of come to the beliefs that you do is because you care a lot about freedom. You want people to have freedom. That's would you say that that's like a huge thing for you? It's like freedom.
It's not the highest, but it's
what's the highest?
Morality.
Morality. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. That's fair. But I mean, honestly, I would say that a government system is probably more so. Now, I don't think that government is inherently good. I think you can absolutely have bad governments. I think that we've seen bad governments throughout history. But I think that government at the end of the day is no more than just people acting collectively together and doing that's a system, and that system could be defined as a government.
It's you're just so wrong when you say it's nothing more.
Excuse me?
You're saying that it, like we talked about this when you're on that, yeah. Like it is collective action, but when you say it's nothing more, that's like political rhetoric. That's not true.
Could you elaborate?
It's more things than that. I can name hundreds of things that government is that are more. I'm talking about, if I'm being literal, government is more than collective action. It's a specific type of collective action doing specific things. So to say that it's nothing more than that is not really. It's not the level of truth that I'm comfortable being at.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, that's a distinction. I can not use that terminology.
Yeah, I mean, me starting an Elks Club is also collective action.
Yeah.
You know, like me, like moving a table is also that. Like, but to say nothing more, it's like nothing more than what? I mean, so I agree. But I was saying when you were on the show that like what it is though is it is the monopoly on violence, and
yeah, and I think that that's better for everybody.
It's better for everybody. Cool. Great. Yeah. Cause I mean, I just like, you know, like that's why it's like a cool discussion. Cause I just like getting people on the record, getting certain viewpoints on the record. That's why I read comments and shit. Cause cool. I got to think about it. Cause I know that you guys are both way more pro authority than me. And Anna Voltas has blown my mind on like Christian justification for authority. I'm like, dude, do I have to like do what they say? Like, dang it. Like, I don't know. But Anna Voltas, how do you like, okay. This is one of the things I forgot to ask you when you were on. Okay, so you think government, like authority is derived, like rights are, and justice are derived from authority. Does that mean if a law, what happens with a law that the government implements that directly goes against God's law? Do you have to comply with that as a citizen?
Well, you obviously comply with the higher law because it has a greater authority.
Okay. Okay. All right. Wow. Simple and smooth, baby. That's okay. Because I just didn't know. Because it's like, does it work up and up? Because it says in the Bible, like, submit to your governing authorities. But I don't know much more than that verse. about that subject. So like, so you would, you go with the higher law, right?
Yeah. On the idea of collective action, I'd like to, that this idea of collective action, while it is something that is very much affirmed in countries that have arisen since the Enlightenment, I would say that very frequently it's not true in a functional sense. And what I mean by that is very frequently what you see is that people will say that they are ruled by the people, but in fact, what happens is you have an oligarchy. And one of those ways would be, I guess, it, the big money politics, for example.
Okay. So do you, like, yeah, so do you, you don't believe in the people, you know, like, you know, like government is the people. Do you agree with that statement, Ed Valtis?
I do not, and I do not on principle, because I have a view of authority that necessitates that it is top down for my religion.
Okay. And so can you, I don't know if, like how to do it, but what, can you just elaborate on the Christian perspective, according to you, on what you just said?
Well, the perspective is simply my perspective, which would be called the imperial ethic, is that ethics, of course, are generated by God and are commanded by God into the world, but also that through God's providence, there are rulers in the world, and that those rulers therefore rule at the grace of God. Now, likewise, in the sense that God cannot be unseated because he is the one that holds the supreme authority, the rulers themselves have what is called a sovereign immunity, where they cannot be essentially delegitimized except through their own consent. And this country does have that system. You can actually sue the government in various ways. So, but I would say that it is not necessarily a moral requirement to have that type of system. And in that sense, I am not a populist. I'm not saying that the people themselves should necessarily have these rights, but in the system that I propose, the people would have these rights.
Okay. All right. So, and so you're basically saying the, you know, popularity ain't inherently good. And a populist would say that. Do you feel that democracy is inherently good, Carl?
I think that democracy, no, I don't think it's inherently good, because obviously we can see time and time again where the majority has not supported something that is good. I mean, that's really easy to see examples of that. So I don't think that it's inherently good, but I do think that democracy is important. And I think that it's important to also have a constitution that protects certain rights so that certain things are off the table, where, so we vote on certain things, but I don't think that there are some things that should never be infringe upon. I think one example is freedom of speech. I think that that's super important. We should never infringe upon freedom of speech. I don't think that someone should be able to vote to take away someone's right to speech. Mm. And so democracy is important, but there needs to be a constitution that protects certain rights.
So you don't back any speech laws?
I think slander, libel laws, I think that those are fine. I think that, you know, not yelling fire in a crowded theater. Yeah. That's the example people always use. You know, no direct calls to violence.
Right.
But other than that, I don't support like hate speech laws, for example, or anything. Yeah. I think that that's a fairly slippery slope, I guess.
Yeah. Good. Nice. Good to know. I was downtown streaming the other day. We were interviewing people, and this lady we were interviewing was just like, it's like, you can say whatever you want as long as you like don't insult me or whatever. And I'm like, man, you should definitely be able to insult people. Like, you should definitely be able to say what you want and then beat speech with speech. It was just a funny moment, because it's like, if we could just get to like no destruction of property, we can like say whatever we want. Like, so like, Anna Voltis, dual consensual combat, dual culture, things like that. What's your stance on that?
Well, I'm a martial artist, so I do fight people consensually, but not to the death. I think that in regards to fights that are specifically intended to produce injury or to kill people, I would say that, in my view, I think that killing someone in that way is a very frivolous way to kill someone. I don't think that I would approve it in any community that I'm a part of. But I think that since both people would be consenting hypothetically here, that if somebody in a different community wanted to do that, I think they should be allowed to.
Okay, so you wouldn't like step in and say, you know, across, you wouldn't invade the next magisterium to say no dueling?
I think that it is something that I don't approve of. However, I do think that it is not in my community, it is not my responsibility for that. And I trust that the members of the other communities will take responsibility for their conduct.
Okay. All right. So, Carl, free healthcare, free college, but like Colosseums.
Colosseums?
Colosseums, know, Tigers.
I can't get behind lethal dueling, man. I can't get behind. I can get behind non-lethal. I wrestled as a kid. You know, I did like martial arts and stuff. So I can get behind non-lethal, but once it gets to lethal, I think that's...
I'm all about those hypotheticals, man. We got a question for Carl. Does Carl believe the federal government should provide abortions at taxpayer expense?
Up to a certain point. I think that it kind of depends on... I know that that's like a tricky kind of thing. I personally think it's pro-choice up to viability outside the womb.
Okay.
I think
that that's like 20 fairly, weeks, 21 weeks.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Taxpayer
funded, though, man. Wow.
So yeah,
that's the opt-out thing, man. Like, you're literally making people engage in evil.
I mean, that depends if you consider evil. I mean, we can have the debate. We can have the debate.
No. We're not having a debate over whether I think it's evil. Like, there's no way to change my mind. You know what I mean? We can debate whether something that's objective and outside of us, but an opinion or a belief is kind of like, what are you gonna debate about that? I mean, do you know what I mean by that? It's like I'm not.
I mean, what if some people think that it's wrong that women can drive?
That's literally talking about someone other than me. I'm saying on my opinion, like personalize it to me. I think it's evil. I want to opt out.
No, and there are some people I think in like
you gotta engage in this argument without saying some people. You gotta say me. Because we're not talking about hypotheticals. We're talking about literally me. Can I opt out of paying taxes on aborting an 18-week-old baby in your government system?
If we had a Medicare for all system, I don't think that you'd be able to opt out of that, no.
Okay. What if I did?
What if you did?
Yeah, what if I did? What if I measured it and sectioned off the part of my taxes that went to that, and I said, I'm not paying this portion because it goes directly to murder?
Then you would be... charged with some sort of civil offense.
I guess eventually it would end badly, but
not paying taxes is only a civil offense. I double checked after our thing. It's only a civil offense. You can't go to jail for simply not, if you do everything else right, as long as you, if you don't pay the taxes, you will never go to jail.
Really civil. Fascinating. Send me like something on that, and I'll put it in the description.
I'll find a link for you.
I would love to see that. I'll talk about it on my show, man. Cool.
Okay.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, because the thing is, like, that's what's so scary about this can't opt out thing, because it's like you're literally making people engage in what they believe is evil. Not some people, not you, not him, them, me. The worldview, the political worldview literally makes it so people have to engage in what they view as murder for other people to get healthcare and other people to get, you know, like whatever. It's crazy. It's fucking insane, to be honest.
No, I mean, my taxes go and we commit wars overseas. I think
I know, and that's horrible.
And I don't have the mental fortitude to I'm not going to pay taxes. I don't have the mental fortitude to, you know, just stop and say, put me in prison. I'm not going to do it. But that's the reality. I mean, do you pay taxes?
Yeah, I do. I do. And it's
so
terrible.
I mean, our taxes go to murder, you know?
It's terrible. It's been my oldest point. I've been making this point for 20 years.
I think that democracy is important. I think that it's important to fight for the changes that you believe in. You know, I think that if you're pro-life,
You should be able to opt out of those wars, man.
I don't think that that's really feasible.
I don't know. Like, yeah, I mean, that's not what should means.
Okay. Oh, well, I mean,
you know what I mean? Like that's not what should mean. Like, let me ask Anna Voltas about that. When I say you should be able to opt out of that, but it won't work. I mean, can I make that should statement while recognizing that it's not feasible?
Well, I like to view taxes as not something sorry, government spending as not something that the people are doing. I like to make a clear distinction between the people and the government as a corporate entity. And by doing that, I essentially assign the responsibility for government spending to the government necessarily. Now, that being said, therefore, saying that it's your money going to abortions, in my view, would be inaccurate because it is no longer your money because it went through a transaction.
Yeah.
Now, it's very important for me to do this because I personally, after a lot of thought on this, have eventually come to the conclusion that I think abortion is very much worse than genocide. And because of that, it's very important to separate that idea, because if I say that it is my money and therefore that the American people collectively are paying for this, if I say that, then that would necessarily mean that I would have to evade taxes for moral reasons, and that it would be completely immoral for me to pay taxes. And some people would even argue that it would be necessary to engage in violence.
Wow. So I see what you're saying, man. Yeah.
So I think it's very important to make that distinction. Now, I do say also that when it concerns the government, that those in government, therefore, such as at least those who have the power over that particular policy, are the ones that are personally responsible for what I would consider to be a complete abomination. And that every day that goes on, that they do not resolve the issue, is a day that is added to their doom and the doom of this country.
Wow. That's a very interesting. I never even thought that, like, made me laugh out loud when you said that it's not your money. It's literally not your money anymore. Wow. And so, like, yeah. And so to play devil's advocate a little bit, does that, like, isn't that a little bit like you walking your way back from a conclusion? I agree with you, by the way, but on the abomination part, but like you're saying, because that conclusion is true, you couldn't view it as your money. Do you get what I mean?
Well, I think it's similar to how if you go to a, let's say a little lemonade stand and you buy some lemonade and you don't know where that money's going. You don't know what that person's going to use that money for. It's no longer your money. It's somebody else's money.
Those 9-year old girls are smoking crack in the basket.
Who knows?
Yeah.
But in a similar way, once you make that transaction where it's to a different corporation, then it's different. And Jesus himself told his disciples to pay their taxes. And that's, of course, to the Roman government, which did not have a separation of church and state, where the emperor was literally a religious figure. And the Pharaoh, that is to a literal god in Egypt. So in that sense, it's very important to make the distinction.
Okay. So the artist says, but if you get a tax return, it kind of is still your money. You give them a 0% interest loan to abort kids. Like, do you think, so is that just another transaction? Like, you get the money back, that's another transaction because it goes through the filters and Avoltis?
Yes. It is another transaction.
Oh, wow.
Because the tax return is something that is done after the fact. That is why it's called a tax return. And therefore, the government can simply change the laws and you don't get a return or other things, you know?
Hmm.
So I think it is essentially a different element than the actual taxes.
Wow.
Now, of course, if it turns out that you owed more, then you pay more. But in essence, what I'm saying is that there is a middleman, and it's very important to understand that the middleman exists as an entity that has moral agency.
This just made me think about it. Like, it's, you know, I don't know. It's very, first of all, it's interesting getting like biblical and talking about religion in this. And I didn't know you were a Christian either, Carl. It's very interesting. But like, if Jesus said to pay your taxes, you know, I'm sure that the Roman government was not doing a bunch of good stuff. There was elements of the Roman government, you know, doing terrible stuff at the time, and I'm pretty sure that Jesus, yeah, I don't know, probably knew that. You know, like being, being Jesus.
I bet he knew it.
Yeah. So I mean, it's very interesting, but I don't know what to say about. Well, I don't know. If you use Anavoltis' argument that that's a transaction, that's no longer your money, it's not really taxpayer funded, which kind of defeats my argument of being able to opt out in the first place. I'm just kind of, it's just hypothetical, and it's, well, first, it's dark as fuck thinking me talking about it. But
the government is taxpayer funded, but the government programs are government funded.
Yeah.
Important. That's an interesting distinction, but I don't hate it. I feel like, especially because I could see that being convincing to a lot of people. So I do not hate that argument, Anna Voltis. I also appreciate the biblical examples.
Yeah. Man, this is so, I mean, I can't, I don't know. It's hard for me to like wrap my head around it. It's just like, like abortion is so evil, but let's move on. So taxes, printing, and raising funds. Anna Voltis, talk about why you think fiat's good, man. I still haven't wrapped my brain around this.
Well, the reason fiat currency is good in general is because if you have a currency based on a commodity, what can happen is a similar thing that happened to Spain in the early modern times, where their currency got massively inflated through their colonial expansion and the taking of gold from Central and South America. But not just gold, but any other commodity has a similar problem, such as wampum. There was a big crash in wampum after people started artificially making it. And so in general, that's why I don't think having a commodity-based currency is good. But the important thing about fiat currency is, therefore, the monetary policy. There's people that are in favor of discretionary spending, and then there's people that are more in favor of a monetarist system where you have a set of rules that govern how the monetary policy goes for all times rather than doing a discretionary spending. I'm in the latter camp, but I understand that there's a lot of people that are in the earlier camp.
Okay. And so, dumb question. Give me a couple examples of like free market monetary policy.
I don't think monetary policy is the same thing as a market.
Okay.
But if you want to talk about the free market, I suppose monetary policy can be used through discretionary spending to grease the wheels, essentially.
Where they divert funds.
By giving government stimulus.
Okay.
Or you can also say that that makes the market less free because it's a government interference, and therefore companies that would have failed don't fail because they have government support. So there's arguments on both sides of the issue on that.
Okay. So what do you think about that, Carl?
I think that, yeah, I mean, I'm obviously also a fan of fiat currency. I think that it's important to, I think the Federal Reserve is important. I think it's important to.
Oh my gosh.
Let's hear it. Why don't you?
Okay. That's awesome, man. Okay. So, but the Federal Reserve existed before we went off the gold standard. So it's not exactly the, like, fractional reserve banking is not the same thing as fiat. Am I right, guys? Or wrong?
Yeah, no, you're right. Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Because I'm an idiot on this stuff. I mean, I like philosophy a lot, and I like words, the best words, you know, but like, as far as like knowing what that proper term is and stuff. So the, like, is the Fed and fractional reserve banking synonymous? Is that true?
Well, no, that's not, they're not, no, they're not synonymous. No, okay. But like the fractional reserve banking that like comes through the Fed kind of, I mean, in other countries, they do it through a different, they don't have exactly a Federal Reserve, but it's,
yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I just, like, to me, it's always just been such a no brainer. You have money based on stuff that exists, and then you have money that's based on stuff that does not exist. And I want it to be based on a thing that currently exists. So, but you guys think I'm wrong. right like,
yeah, yeah.
It's
no,
amazing.
No, I do.
Okay,
well, I would disagree that money doesn't exist. I mean, obviously it's physically there, it has value.
What it's based on doesn't exist. Like, that's what fiat is, correct?
Yeah.
Well, fiat means by breath.
Really?
Okay.
Yeah. That's the, like, the root of the word.
As it's for example the Italian fiato, fiat with an o at the end, but anyway.
That's awesome, man. This is so funny to know. Okay, so keep going though. So like, it's based on, but it's like the blood and the trust of the society is
what's based on. Currency anyway? Currency is multiple people essentially agreeing that things have value, but instead of trading those things themselves, they have a medium of exchange. And I don't think the medium itself necessarily has to have value for it to be useful as a medium of exchange.
I think that's spot on. Yeah, I completely agree.
All right. Wow, that's amazing. So, I mean, like, yeah. And so for you, Carl, though, what is like an example of like monetary policy that isn't diverting funds? Like, do you want federal price control?
Federal price control.
Yeah, I mean, that's really.
Could you give me an example of like what you're worried about?
Yeah, yeah. Like setting the minimum or a maximum on some sort of commodity that's essential to the U.S., like oil, timber. You know, timber probably is not essential anymore. But like oil, dairy. Anything rubber. You know, and so setting a. Now, I'm not even exactly sure if we already do this. I have a feeling we do. But like that is one of the slippery slope things that that libertarians are like, you know, when you start setting price controls is when you start implicitly taking over industry, which is the road to government control of the means of production, which is communism, you know, which is full on socialism. So when you start price controlling industries rather than letting them act in a market, that's part of the slippery slope. So I'm asking, do you want the federal government to control like internal prices on goods?
I don't see an inherent problem with it, but off the top of my head, I can't think of a good that I would necessarily want to see price controls enacted. Yeah. But I don't see an inherent
problem. And I specifically mean internal because, like, you know, I do believe in some form of protectionism, like from international companies. Like, okay. I think that we should be able to give our goods or take goods and, you know, basically tax other countries on our goods as much as we want. Is that protectionism, Anavoltis?
No, it is.
Essentially is any policy that is designed to protect internal industries of a country or essentially any element of the inside of a country against foreign competitors.
Okay. So anything to protect your internal production and markets from foreign competitors. Okay, I'm learning here, guys. This is awesome.
So Steven, so I'm curious. So you really don't come to like kind of your, I guess you don't even consider yourself like a libertarian necessarily.
I don't, dude. I'm about to cut up my card, dude. I got my LP card. I'm about to cut that shit up, dude. It's like,
yeah, no.
But I'm pro liberty. And I think like if you're pro constitution, you're also pro liberty. So my friends have been telling me I'm not a libertarian. They're like, just because you're pro liberty doesn't make you a libertarian. But I used to be an ANCAP. I used to be full on like no government. Now, like basically the more Christian I got, the less libertarian I got. And so now I'm at the end of like, you know, a year and a half, 2 years of being, you know, so-called Christian. And I'm pretty, you know, I don't know if I'm a libertarian. I don't know. But I'm very pro gun. Like, I don't know. Just keep going.
Oh, well, because the reason I asked, I was just curious how you like kind of reconcile like the, you know, the belief in the market and how necessary the markets is with protectionism.
Yeah, I don't know. See, that's where I get off the train.
Super contradiction. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. So that's where I get, like, if I'm faced with like keeping a label versus having a contradiction, I'll just ditch the label because it is a contradiction. Like, I consider people that are like full on open borders and full on global free market to be basically like leftist libertarians. You know, like, and insane. Like, that's an insane worldview. Like, I think, like, honestly, like, communism is better than, like, open borders libertarianism. Like, it's an insane worldview to me. Like,
wait, so I'm just, you know, we don't have to go off the rails here, but, like, immigration is something, you know, I'm pretty interested in. But, to you, what is your standard for immigration then?
I think you should have a strong border, but also I think you should have a lot of private property. I'm like, I'm going through an internal debate and also external with some guy in the chat of like whether public or private property should even exist in the first place. If it's all private property, the border situation solves itself because it's just like they can enter in some sort of sponsorship system. I mean, I am in favor of either shutting the border or building a wall, but I wasn't in 2016. Because we, dude, because this shit has been a problem for way longer than me and you have been alive, and it's gotten so out of hand that it's gotten so involuntary to the people that it affects, and it affects the very people that are like the oppressed communities that people talk about all the time. Like, it affects poor people so much.
We can bring Anna Voltis into this too, but what do you mean it affects poor communities?
Dude, I mean, like, I don't know. Do you agree with that statement that like porous immigration affects poor communities, Anna Voltis?
It can, but it really, I don't have the numbers with me on that particular issue.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I just think that like you don't have to know all the numbers to know what saturation is. Saturation and dilution are things that happen in all things concerning resources. That's the reason that it's like just apparent that like there's already poor people in all kinds of places, and we let more poor people in, and we have no like shelf life or no sort of like measurement stick for how we're even gonna deal with all that.
I don't think that most of the people that are coming in legally are particularly poor compared to other people living in the U.S. because it's
I would imagine they're probably above most, or not most people, but above a lot of people in the U.S. people coming in.
Yeah, I know.
That's a difficult process, so it certainly would require a lot of dedication.
That's my point. Difficult
for someone who's really poor.
That's my point. I'm not actually making the case that they're poorer than the poor people. It's that if they're above it, that actually, you know, makes the disparity even more. Like if there's a bunch of skilled workers and stuff like that coming to the United States, it does improve any market. That skilled workers going to a place improves that place. Okay, like that's apparent as well. But also what it does to the environment here, it makes the poorest poorer.
I think it depends on the industry sector, because some industry sectors might have a shortage of workers, some might have a surplus.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, so that's why it's that's why I was saying like communism or whatever, like huge government, I would take that over open borders libertarianism. Cause at least like those big government programs would be for the people in the country at the time that government is supposed to take care of. Like that's the government is supposed to take care of its people, you know? And so like, say we freeze it right now, I would be cool with these government programs because they would take care of people in the country now, and there would be some sort of like cap, some sort of shelf life on a million illegal and a million legal coming in every year. That's been happening for four decades. You know.
So I think that I honestly have several disagreements, I guess, because I am super pro immigration. I think we should probably let in as many people as we possibly can. Like I wouldn't.
What
say
about
pro,
murderers?
Like, I don't think. What'd you say?
Well, should we let murderers in?
Murderers in? I mean, have they been found guilty
yes,
of murder? Like,
many.
In our,
I can show you.
Or,
I can.
No, is it in our courts?
Yes. Have they been found I can show you people that have left out for raping kids, man. They've been let
and
out
they've
by
been
judge.
Found guilty. Why weren't they in prison?
They were in prison for raping kids, and they were let out by the judge because they were immigrants.
And then they came back?
Some. I have a lot of stories. I've covered probably 100 cases like this on my show. But yeah, some of them leave and come back. Some of them go back south, come back north, kill and hurt people again. Yeah, there's a statistically relevant number of people that do this.
Well, I think that it's very irresponsible of us to just let people who commit murder go.
I mean, these are judges. These are judges that are made people in the court systems. They're not going anywhere. You know,
okay, well, so just to respond to your question, then if somebody commits murder in our country, I think they should go to jail. I don't think that they should be sent to another country. But well, I don't. See
oh no, but if they're an illegal immigrant that commits murder in our country, we should just kick them out.
No, I completely disagree.
What you want us taking
like,
on
you
murderers?
Want to go murder someone in another country?
No, murder someone in this country.
Yeah, and so you want to kick them out so they can go murder someone in another country?
No, I would actually just kill them. I would just say that
you're pro the death penalty.
Oh yeah.
You're for liberty and all that stuff. Not
well,
a,
I'm pro like
contradiction there,
dude. We already talked about this for 10 minutes ago.
You're okay with the state killing people?
Not that. No, I'm not that cool with it. But I think it's necessary at a certain level. Yeah. But you don't need to play the liberty card because we talked about this 10 minutes ago.
Well, not, I mean, not really. I just don't, I don't see how that.
I'm not a big, I'm not, liberty's not my highest virtue. We can move on.
Oh, I see. Morality. Okay, so you think it's morally right to let someone kill someone and then you send them somewhere else so they can go kill someone else?
No, I think that if you, like, there are things that the state could put you, should put you to death for. Do you agree with that, Anavoltis?
Yes, actually, I do.
Yeah, what are they?
Not necessarily all the same things as you do, but
okay. First of all, just to clarify, I was kind of just like I'm pro definitely like death penalty for like pedophilia. You know, I'm just kind of making an off the cuff comment about you should just kill him. It's about the facts of the case, but like a serial unrepentant murderer, I think the state could put them. I'm comfortable saying that. So that's my actual position, not like you should fucking kill him. Like my actual position, if you're like a serial unrepentant murderer, then it's fine. So that would be my position, Anavoltis.
Yeah, I'm generally not in favor of long-term incarceration.
Yeah.
I'm in favor of essentially three different forms of punishment. The first would be a monetary restitution. The second would be a labor restitution in order to essentially pay back for the crime plus on top in order to satisfy justice in the sense of making it difficult. And the third would be the death penalty.
Okay, but like what would be your hard lines on the death penalty?
Well, since a lot of the laws in Koinonism are decentralized, obviously all jurisdictions have murder and rape and such things illegal by default. However, the exact means by which they wish to punish them is actually up to them as their legal system is concerned. Now, if it happens in an area controlled by the magisteria directly, such as a government complex of buildings, then the penalty would be death for any one of those crimes, even theft. But I would say that crimes which I would absolutely punish with death are things like insurrection, treason, forgery, illegal forgery of currency, and perjury in high offices, bribery, receiving bribes, and
forms of I'm corruption. Sorry, Anavoltis. Are those things that you would punish with death?
Yes.
The illegal forgery of currency.
Yes.
Based.
Why? Why?
Because it essentially is an existential threat to the government by undermining the government's financial system.
Wow. You don't. Okay. All right. I don't even. Okay.
Ask him some questions about it. Yeah. Yeah. Just ask questions. We know you disagree. I want to know what I want to see you pick it apart or something like that.
So you view that as. It's so important that the government's currency is kept true and pure that if someone commits forgery, they should be put to death.
Yes.
And this is done through a community level.
This is a central law that you would be put through a court. And if it is proven as fact in the court that such an event was carried out knowingly and willingly, then the natural penalty as prescribed in the civil code is death.
So your system has central laws?
Yes.
Okay, but like how is there a way to change those laws?
Yes, you can amend the constitution.
Okay, so your system does have a constitution?
Yes.
And in that constitution, it's forgery, and what were some of the other things? Treason?
Treason, insurrection. Uh-huh. If a high government official commits perjury, that's a death penalty. Carrying out a coup is a death penalty. Receiving or giving bribes to high government officials is a death penalty.
And so you don't think that prison gets the job done?
I think prison is a waste of time.
Yeah. I do too. Yeah.
So that, I mean, there's no room for rehabilitation. There's no room for wiggle room. There's anything someone.
Well, I think that when it concerns bill, they, when it concerns the central government, I think it's very important to be very hard line against anything that would destroy it.
Oh, that's a. I think that's a very, very dangerous road to go down, and I think that that's gonna lead to a lot of people dying. Does that bother you? If a lot of people,
I don't think it's likely that a lot of people would die simply due to the fact that the punishments would be well known. And it's not as if it's something that's easy to do. It's not as if you, in your daily life, you go out and you start printing money illegally. It would necessarily have to be something that is premeditated and thought about beforehand.
I'm loving this shit right now.
Okay, wow. Yeah, no, I don't want to get too off
the rails.
This
is based. No, this is on the rails, my friend.
So some stupid kid, he goes and he decides, I'm going to try and print some money. And he...
Federal money, right?
Yeah, federal money, yeah. Yeah, federal. Right. He wants to...
Yeah, what about that? What about the unwitting idiot? Yeah, that's kind of what I was asking about, like outliers, like.
Well, the law would use the terminology knowingly and willingly, and okay. It would be up to the court to determine as a fact whether or not the defendant knowingly and willingly did the forbidden act.
So this is kind of just a criticism of the death penalty overall, but do you feel like it's an issue that there is 100% with that system, there will be people who are innocent that will be put to death?
I've been asking the same question on my show a lot lately, by the way, Carl, the exact same question. Yeah,
I think the way you alleviate that is by having more rigorous standards of evidence. One of the problems I see is that the jury system, as the U.S. and English common law systems have it, is... sort of inadequate for that due to the absence of experts.
Hmm.
So who decides who's guilty and non-guilty?
It would be a panel of judges in a way that's similar to, let's say, Germany nowadays has that system. And it's about, I talked to a lawyer that's worked in both systems. It's he believes it's about equally effective.
But if it's equally effective, then yeah, you just said that then innocent people will still die.
Well, no, because my standards of evidence are higher.
Can I ask a question about that? So you mentioned something about the experts not being in English common law. Do I have that right?
What I'm saying is that a trial by jury of your peers does not guarantee that your peers have high standards of evidence.
Yeah.
And very frequently it is possible to persuade people in court to essentially abdicate their reason in favor of sensationalism.
Okay. And so how would experts come about? I mean, like, would that be government trained? Like what's an expert?
Well, it would be someone that is trusted by the individuals who run the magisteria to be able to carry out such judgments.
Okay. So, but wouldn't
and
that...
they would obviously be able to sue each other if it is believed that the standards of evidence used are inadequate.
Wow. Okay. I'm sorry. We haven't been talking about Quininism this whole time. So who is the magisteria? Is that like the ruling class?
The magisteria are essentially the legislative and administrative bodies that exist in the Quininist system. And there's no fixed number of them because they can expand or contract within the system based on its territorial or populational size. So there can be, let's say, four levels of government or maybe a million levels of government if you get really, really big, although it's it all depends on how big it is. It's essentially designed to be infinitely expandable or contractable.
You see that up there, Carl?
No, yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
Nice, yeah, okay, so...
Okay, cool, thank you.
Yeah. So yeah, just when you talked about it, yeah. So like up top is, what do you call that again?
It's a parliamentary system.
Yeah.
So they're elected?
Yes, they are elected.
Okay. So which all, so all the people at the top rung, they're the ones that are elected and everyone else is appointed, or?
Well, the way it works is that each commune elects its own government, which can take various forms depending on the commune. And then the government of the commune appoints a magistrate to the magisterium above it. And then the magisterium above it elects a president of a magisterium, who then appoints another magistrate above it, and so on, until you reach the supreme magisterium, which then elects the commissions, which do the central governmental functions, although most intermediate magisteria deal with arbitration between the communes and the establishment of courts and the coordination of law enforcement.
Okay. So I guess what I'm curious about is, so you did make the point that you would have judges that are appointed, but you, I mean, obviously there are still the opportunity for innocent people to be potentially put to death for fake currency. And so like, how do you reconcile that? Is it just not an issue?
Well, I would say that if the standards of evidence are high enough, it's highly unlikely, to the degree that I don't think it is an issue.
So as long as like, okay, like just like not to be like aggressive or anything, but like, so like a system's okay if it only kills like a few innocent people opposed to like a lot of innocent people.
Well, ideally no innocent people would be killed, but I think it's necessary to kill people who do commit such crimes.
But
so base. I'm sorry. That's just so like, to me, it's just so real. Like it's such like an honest admittance of what government is that I can't do anything but like love it. I don't know if I like, it's just like, or like smile at it, and because it's just so based. like because it's like what he's saying is government, what government handles, they're gonna get on lock, and if you fuck with what government is, you are gonna get the death penalty. And what government is the money and the power and its responsibility. And you will, if it fucks with that, it's not about like someone's like not for lack of a better word, like emotional moral laws. It's like if it fucks with the government's core, death penalty. Correct, Anavolta?
Yes. Okay. Essentially, if something is an existential threat to the government, whether through its internal function or as an external threat, then it must be eliminated.
Yes. So Carl, what the scale that you're thinking about it on is not the same scale as his. It's not about like,
well,
how
I wouldn't say it's a scale. I think it's a different worldview, perhaps.
Right. It's just its function. It's if the crime has the function of being very, very damaging to the state, then that's the worst thing.
And that's why I say that murder and rape are things that do destroy things on a societal level, in a social sense, but that's why I put it to the communes to decide how to punish them, because I think that it's not necessarily something that affects the government in the most direct sense, but if it is something that affects the government in the most direct sense, then it is something that the government must eliminate. I think if someone becomes an existential threat to the government, it's only a fair response for the government to become an existential threat to that person.
Would you describe that as a fascistic fascism or authoritarian at the very least?
I would not describe that as authoritarian, because there are still very many elements that are similar to liberalism. In the sense that people do have free speech, people do have free association, people can create communes that are more diverse than the societies that people are able to create in liberal countries. So in that sense, I would not say that it is authoritarian, and it is not fascistic, because if it were fascistic, then we would force everybody to be in mega unions, which is what the fascists do, but that's not what we have. And also fascism has a number of other things that I do not agree with.
But
for
so
example,
you, oh, sorry.
Yeah. For example, I'm not a nationalist. I'm not a I'm not a populist in any sense. So I think that government is not something that is run necessarily as a benefit to its people, necessarily. What I mean is that government can act as a benefit to its people, and acting as a benefit to its people is something that is useful for the government for its continued existence. And I think that is the realist formulation for giving people freedom, is that giving people freedom is useful for the government's continued existence.
Yeah. So I think that's just a big problem I'd have with that, is that it's it all ends in the death penalty, all those things. It doesn't end in prison. That's, I guess that would be one of my biggest problems.
Why do you
that.
Like prison? Like, why do you like people paying out of pocket to preserve lives that will never get better?
I think that life is one of the most important things in this world, and I think that it should be preserved.
But of them didn't follow that train of logic.
No, I know. No, wait, are you saying like a murderer?
Yeah.
Or something?
Yeah, but a lot of them didn't buy into that.
In his thing, murderers don't get the death penalty. That's decided by the community, correct?
Yes. Not necessarily.
I'm asking about, like, I'm kind of pivoting back to the present, like the present
okay,
system.
Okay,
like,
we'll get
like,
out of.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, okay, we can talk about coinism, but like that's kind of what I didn't plan this, but like that's kind of the interesting angle in this interview, is the coinism is not the current form of government, and what you like to do, Carl, is talk about like what's practical. Basically.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, like, why it's kind of like your question and my question are the same about, like, how many broken eggs are you willing to fry to make the omelet, you know?
Yeah.
But I would counter with, like, what level of rotten eggs are you willing to make me pay for?
Interesting. Okay.
Dude,
well, I think that
there's a non-zero number of child rapists that are in jail under our dime right now.
Yeah. No, without a doubt. I think that rehabilitation should be like a huge part of our government. Now, I'm not talking about maybe the more extreme examples, but I think that we have way too many people in prison. So I think that if we really changed our system, I mean, in like countries, and I think it's like in Norway, I mean, they don't even have like the highest penalty is like 7 years. I think they don't have like life sentences and everything. And it's not like there's no murderers in Norway. It's not like there's not anything. If someone has a real like problem where they're going to habitually kill people or rape or something, they go to a mental institution. They don't go to prison, because that's where someone like that belongs. They belong in a mental institution because they have something wrong with them mentally.
I actually have more problems with me paying for it than where they go. Like, they go to the freaking field, they can go to the gulag, they can go whatever they can. But the fact that it's like it's a suck on society, we have to pay for it, and these are people that are, I'm not saying all, but I'm saying a lot, are never ever ever gonna get better regardless of where they go.
Wait. So you said like not a lot though. You said
I don't know the numbers, so I'm really just speaking out of my ass. But it's so apparent that it's a statistically non-zero. I mean, it's more than
10%. I don't disagree with that.
You know what I mean?
I don't disagree that it's a non-zero number.
Yeah, even if it's 10%. I mean, I think I would like. But the thing is, you can't really look that up because you have to audit every person. Like, you would have to get into the soul and the heart of every person and see how many true killers there were. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know, but I'm just saying, like, why is that justified?
No,
but it's also interesting that I'm not even talking about, like, I keep going away from what Anna Voltas is talking about, because he's talking about, like, corruption. I'm talking about the sickos, but you're saying that Anna Voltas, that a community could implement the death penalty on sickos, like a mad,
yes,
like one of the under.
They can if they want to.
Yeah, okay.
They can also go rehabilitative if they want to.
Yeah, okay.
All I'm saying is things that directly become existential threats to the government are things that should be eliminated.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So what I'm saying is, like, I think that the two questions of how many eggs are you going to break versus how many rotten eggs are you going to put up with, the latter is a way better question. There's way more of that.
I think that if your standards of evidence are sufficient, that it doesn't really matter.
What, like, what you do?
Because,
or what do you mean?
You could argue equally that people could be innocent, people could be sentenced to prison or could be sentenced to pay a fine. But I think that if the standards of evidence are sufficient, then after the evidence is established, then it doesn't really matter which way you go on the issue. So I don't think that there's necessarily a greater weight in a moral sense to falsely convicting someone and sentencing them to death, or falsely convicting someone and then sentencing them to pay a fine.
Oh, that's false. I see what you're saying. It's like on a truth level, it's like it's false either way.
Yeah, and I think if the standards of evidence are insufficient, then obviously it is a good argument to be made that there should be better standards of evidence.
Yeah. So Carl, you're completely anti-death penalty.
Yes. How, I'd say that one of the biggest reasons is because there is a chance that we will kill an innocent person.
Yeah.
And that's also a non-zero number.
Right. How are you pro-abortion, though?
What'd you say?
How are you pro-abortion?
Like I said, I think that it all depends on where you draw the line.
I'm asking you where you draw the line.
No, that's what I just said. I think that it depends on where you draw the line.
No, and I'm asking you where you do Carl, not the hypothetical proverbial you.
Oh, and that's what I said. I thought I said it earlier. Viability outside the womb.
Well, you don't. Okay, so you think that you're pro. Like, do you think abortion is a good thing or a bad thing?
Good thing or a bad thing? I think that a lot of people probably don't want to be in that situation.
What about you?
I think that that's a fine thing. What do you?
What about you?
I mean, I want to have kids someday, so I mean, I wouldn't.
Okay. Do it. But like, it's like I don't understand how you can like the more innocent of two lives is the unborn. Versus the serial rapist.
That's why I said it depends on where you draw the line for individual personhood, like where that begins.
Yeah. Okay.
So where do you draw that line?
I draw that shit at fertilization. At conception.
Okay, so say like someone like if a woman is going to get an abortion, should she be charged with murder?
I don't know about what to do with it.
She takes a plan B pill.
But it's killing. I actually don't know how the science works.
I say
that.
Yes.
So you say yes, that it's that's murder.
Yes.
I think so too.
She should go to jail for murder. She should be treated like a murderer the same way that we would kill.
Yes.
At least that's logically consistent, I suppose. I mean, like, should like a pregnant woman, should she be able to be charged? Like, you know, she's like going to go somewhere. Should people be able to charge her like two tickets and stuff like that?
Two tickets for what?
It's just two people. If it's two people.
Yeah.
I don't understand the question. I didn't follow your question, Carl.
Just like, I mean, obviously there are like events that people go to and everything. Should businesses be allowed to charge pregnant women?
Oh, in that sense, no.
How? If it's two people, though?
Because
in the eyes of the law, we have to
two souls.
Where we draw individual personhood.
It's two souls.
Because one person's inside the other person. Yeah. So it's not as if and economically speaking, it's not as if the food intake is twice the amount of two adults.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, but that's not how businesses always decide it, though. But legally, you have to decide where you define individual personhood. I mean, when there's fertilization, should they get a social security number?
No, I don't think so.
Why not?
But why not? Because we don't legislate the soul. We don't legislate, like, I'm talking about the soul, not the... Like, there is a difference between, like, people do grow, you know what I mean? But, like, I'm talking about the soul, the thing that we call life. I do not call, like, you know, I don't call life starting at 9 months. I mean, I think life is the soul. I think you are your soul.
And that's why I've never defined individual personhood at life necessarily.
Yeah.
I mean, defining an individual personhood.
Yeah.
Where someone becomes a separate, distinct person, and that's how they're treated in the eyes of the law.
Well, yeah. Historically, many times children wouldn't even be named until a number of years after they were born.
He says that he thinks a dad should be able to kill their kid until their 18th birthday.
Oh wow!
Because it's like he's like, it's my property. What do you think about that, Anabaltis?
Well, I think that there is a responsibility that parents have to their children. And I think that abortion is a fundamental, and also filicide are fundamental rejections of that responsibility that God has established.
Yeah.
So
he's just saying you should be able to, not that he would, but he's like, that's my property.
Well, I say that historically in a lot of Bronze Age societies where the government wasn't very present, parents did exercise the power of life and death over their children. But now we have more complex societies where we can hold each other more accountable in direct senses. So I don't think it's necessary for that to happen in our society.
Wait, why wasn't your answer just no? If you're against abortion at conception, then how did you let that drag on for up to 18 years? Why wouldn't you just like, no, that's not
my rule? Oh, I don't know. No, it's not my rule.
Well, if your kid's a mass murderer and there's no government coming in to stop him, then you got to do something.
Logic. Yeah, dude. No, all right, guys.
No, that's a...
We just did 90 minutes. Let's give Carl the last word, and then I'll let you guys plug your work. That was a lot of fun, guys. So yeah, last word to Carl and plug your work, and then we'll go to Anna Voltis.
Oh God, I have no idea what to say.
You had fun, right?
I just feel like it should have been a shorter answer. That should have been an easy answer. Like, no, someone shouldn't have the ability to kill their.
Well, kids. No, because it's in the Bible, so I had to give a more complex answer.
All right then. All right, I'll give up my last word on that one.
That's fine. Yeah, it's whatever. Just plug your work and let's get out of here. This will be uploaded as a podcast in a couple of days. But where can the people find you, Carl, and anything you want to plug?
Yeah, just check out. Just type in my name on YouTube. My channel will pop up. You know, subscribe on there. Other than that, thanks for having me on, Steven.
Yeah, definitely. We'll definitely do a round two. This was fun. And Voltis, what about you?
Well, I'm on YouTube. I'm also on BitChute under the name Anawiltus, and I'm also on coinanism.com. So that's where you can find me, and thank you all for watching.
Yeah, thanks for coming, everybody. This will be uploaded later. Steven Ignoramus signing off. That was a very, very good discussion with Carl and Anawiltus. Have a nice night, everybody.